I'm going to go ahead and start off by saying that I acknowledge the fact that I have lots to learn, even though I grew up in the church. So what I'm telling, what I'm going to talk about is just what I, something that I've gotten out of what I've read so far. And maybe it's what you guys think too, I don't know. But I went ahead and I took a look at King Solomon in the Old Testament. He was David's son, and he was the king of Israel after King David. I want to look a little bit, just briefly, at some of his accomplishments in life and also his shortcomings, and really see what we can take out of what Solomon did with his life. At the beginning of Solomon's life, he it seemed to me like he was a really he was an humble person, and he really understood how much he didn't understand. In 1 Kings chapter 3, God grants him, he says, I'm going to give you one wish, whatever it is you'd like. And Solomon, he says that he wants a discerning heart. He wants to be able to govern his people the way that they should be governed. And God says he's really proud of him for asking that, so he doesn't only give him wisdom, but fame and, honor and wealth as well. That just shows me right there that he really had an humble attitude, that he was able to, out of everything that he could ask for, he realized he didn't know, he wouldn't be able to rule this great nation of Israel without God's help. And so he asked for wisdom because he realized his shortcomings there. So later on in his life, though, he ended up going against what God said, and he ended up marrying 700 wives from of royal birth, and he had 300 concubines. And the Lord said, "Hey, if you marry, don't marry out of where you are. You're going to start following other gods." And sure enough, that's what happens at the end of his life. I went ahead and I read a little bit of Ecclesiastes. I'm just going to read part of the first chapter of Ecclesiastes. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What does man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The earth rises and the sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those to follow. What that says to me is that King Solomon, writing the book of Ecclesiastes, this Ecclesiastes is a diary of an old man that looks back on his life, and he's troubled, and he regrets things that he's done in his life. The only way that I can learn as a person, I feel like, or one of the few ways is making mistakes myself and also watching the lives of others. What you hear is, you know, we learn all these great things by, you know, we had the Edison making the light bulb, and it took him, he said, 1,000 tries to learn how to finally make it. He messed up 1,000 times, but that was just one other way that not to make a light bulb. But why did we always live our lives, and we can look back and we say, look, this doesn't work. This doesn't work living this way, but yet we still live it the same way. We're not like a light bulb. We don't learn from our mistakes as people. We make the same mistakes as Solomon did back in this time. We need to take a look at this. King Solomon lived his life in a way. He had 700 wives and he strayed from the Lord. He lived a life of pleasure. He had everything that he could ever want, and he went out and he did it all. He did everything he wanted to because he could. And at the end of his life, he goes and he writes a book. We started reading this. He says everything is meaningless. It's pleasure is meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. If you don't live a life with purpose and if you don't live a life for God, you're going to feel empty inside. You see a lot of, I've been learning a little bit about the Alcoholics Anonymous and how they work in their things. It's about giving yourself to a higher power. And without that, you see a lot of people, they can't defeat alcoholism because they don't have anything to live for. They don't have a purpose in life. So to me, this is saying we can look at this person and we can know we need to live a life of purpose. This is how Solomon says it right here. He did it all. We need to know that we don't want to be this person writing a diary when we're old, saying, talking to the youth and saying, don't live like me. It's all chasing after the wind. So my encouragement to you would be to it goes for all ages, but I think even especially the youth, in myself, really, I need to learn this. I need to be able to realize that some things that seem really great really aren't so great. And it's really, I feel like it's good for me, and it'll be good for maybe if you just want to take a time and think about priorities in life, because some things that seem important maybe aren't so important. And we can take a look at Solomon's life and realize that. Thank you.
Good evening. If you would pull your songbooks out and mark it at 6:05, that's going to be the song of invitation after Michael speaks. I'm going to talk about James. James was a common name in the New Testament. We read of four different Jameses in the New Testament. There's James the Apostle, James who wrote the book of James, brother of Jesus, and there was two other ones that I know of. The two others, they weren't talked about a lot, but I want to talk about James the Apostle. He had a brother, John. He was son of Zebedee, and we read all this in the book. I did a little bit of history research on who he was, and what I came up with, or what I found was, he was born in Galilee. He died around 44 AD in Judea. He was one of the first disciples called, we know that. And he was killed by the sword of Herod. So he was a martyr for his belief. But now that I got the history out of the way, I want to read the first time that he's talked about. Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. And it says this. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, they saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left their boat and their father and followed him. Okay, I wrote down a bunch of stuff, but I don't think that's what God wants you to hear. Here goes Tommy on another fishing story, okay? I relate to James on many levels, okay? Because I remember when I was about 14, 15 years old, I got the dream job for a kid working on a fishing boat, or any kid that loved to fish. I loved that job. I remember it's like my second or third day at work. There was this, I got told, go to the stern of the boat and start cutting a bunch of bait. So that's what I did. I ran back and I started cutting the bait. Well, this guy on the boat, he was one of the other deckhands. He came up and he grabbed my hand and started squeezing it as I'm holding the knife. And he said, drop the knife. And so I dropped the knife, you know, and I looked at him and he said, don't ever use my knife again. And like, I kind of like, you know, Tommy, like, haha. And then looked at him and this guy was serious. He was said, don't use my knife. And I was like, oh, so here's this, you know, 14-year-old kid getting like this grown man saying, don't use his knife. And I was scared. I was scared. Like, we're in the middle of the ocean and this guy wants to kill me now, you know? Like, it's easy to dispose of a body out here. And so I got home that day and I was like sitting in my bedroom thinking like, man, these guys are pretty tough. Like, they're not the nicest guys in the world. You know, you think they were being nicer. And so I said, well, if I got to, you know, I was always told if you're going to play with the big kids, you got to act like the big kids. Don't cry. So my messed up way of thinking was I got to toughen up. I got to start being like these guys, which led to my downfall. Because I would watch these guys come in, and they made sailors look like Mother Teresa. These guys were not the nicest guys. They were belittling to each other, to other people. They were, you know, the phrases, they cursed like sailors, and they drank like fishes, you know. And at 14 years old, that's what I was mimicking. That's what I thought I was supposed to be doing, because now I was in that position. And I found myself following that, and there was a lot of Sundays I missed church because I had to work and all this stuff. And I just remember, you know, one of those summer camps where you go and you just feel so spiritually uplifted and you just feel so great. And I came back and it was like a Saturday, and I told the captain, I'm not coming to work tomorrow. I have church. And they kind of laughed like, you have church, I'll see you in the morning, you know. And I was like, no, I'm not going to be here. I'm going to church. But here's the point I want to make. I don't know how James was before he met Jesus. I know how fishermen were. I worked with these guys. I was these guys. The point I want to, and here's how I want to wrap this up, is Jesus is coming along and he tells them, he says, come with me, follow me, I'm going to make you fishers of men. And they get up and they drop their nets and they go. Jesus took me, God took me, right where I was at, right in the depth of being a fisherman, being this guy that's a dirtbag or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And that's why I relate to James, because he came to him and it was like in an instant. How it's written in here, we see this as bam, 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 and he's gone. And that's what God's done in my life, and that's what he can do in each and every one of your life. And so I relate to James. I had this whole, like, you know, chronological order of James's stuff. But you know what? That's not what God wants us to hear. God wants us to hear true life. God wants us to hear the now. What's happening? What's real in this world? Because this world isn't written on paper. This world is flesh and bone, and we see it day in and day out. I picked James because I see myself in him. I see this dirtbag fisherman that cussed like a sailor and drank like a fish. And then in an instant, God came into my life and said, you know what? That's not where you need to be. Come follow me and I'll make you a fisher of men.
When we decided what we were going to speak about tonight, we decided we were going to talk about our favorite Bible characters and why they're our favorite Bible characters. And my favorite Bible character is David. I remember when I was little, my granddad would read the stories of David to me. I was always fascinated by those stories. At first, I thought my granddad taught me about David because of his courageousness. I mean, he was a small shepherd boy who killed a giant with a stone and a sling. What 7-year-old boy doesn't want to be that guy? But as I've gotten older, I started learning about more about David, and it turns out the guy made quite a bit of mistakes. Well, I've started to notice that I also tend to make quite a few mistakes of my own. And as I become older and gain more responsibility, I find myself coming back to the stories of David. I've read about how his life changed as he grew older. In David's lifetime, he fought many foes, dealt with temptation, and struggled with power. But no matter what he faced it with God. The Lord had a plan for David, and even though he didn't always follow it, David always managed to find his way back. I don't believe that my granddad taught me about David because he had slain a giant. I believe that he taught me about David because in Acts 13:22, God described David as a man after his own heart. The speakers tonight told us about their favorite Bible characters and why they liked them so much. Although they may like them for different reasons than you or I, all three characters have something in common. God had a plan for all of them. In fact, God had a plan for every character in the Bible. Not all of them felt that they were ready or capable or worthy to be part of God's plans. Jonah hid on a boat because he was scared and did not want to do what God told him to. Gideon didn't feel qualified because he's from the smallest of the 12 tribes. Paul persecuted Christians, and David was the youngest of his brothers. Yet, even though they had their flaws, God saw their strengths and gave them purpose. Isn't that what the Church of Christ is? A collaboration of various strengths that make us one body that follows God's purpose? When we first read of David, God has sent Samuel to the house of Jesse to anoint a new king. When Samuel arrived, he saw Eliab, David's older brother. His physical features depicted a king, and Samuel thought, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. But in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7, the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things a man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. When the Lord looked at David, he didn't see a simple shepherd boy. He saw a man who loved him and was willing to follow his plan. Ladies and gentlemen, verse 7 applies to all of us. God sees all of our hearts. He doesn't care about our looks or mistakes. He cares about our intentions, our love, our faith, and our willingness to follow his plan. The truth is, like these Bible characters you have heard about tonight, God has a plan for all of us. Throughout this lesson, I've made the mistake of referring to the people in the Bible as characters. In reality, David was a person just like you and me. I referred to him as a character because he was in a book. But the Bible is not fiction. It is the truth. And last I checked, Christianity does not end in the New Testament. It is still happening every day. It happens through every one of us in this building. And it is our job to make Christianity happen in Ventura, in California, and America. We are commanded to spread Christianity throughout the entire world. That is God's purpose for us, as it was God's purpose for everyone in the Bible. David described his path with God in the 23rd Psalms, which reads, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pasture. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. David is my favorite person to read about in the Bible because no matter what he does or where he goes, God is in the middle of his heart. And I believe that this is why my granddad taught me about David, because it didn't matter if he was a shepherd or a king, David always yearned to follow the plan that God had for him. It is so easy to look at our favorite people in the Bible and say, I wish I had their strength or speaking ability or leadership. But the reality is, those people were real people, full of the same flaws, insecurities, fears, and disappointments that you and I battle. And as God had a plan for them, he has a plan for us too. He knows our strengths, and he knows our weaknesses, and he has the ability to help us each overcome our Achilles heel. So I ask you, what is keeping us from being like James or Solomon or David? What is keeping us from being a disciple? Christianity is not found in a book, and it wasn't only found, or is not only found in a book, and it wasn't only found in a scroll when these disciples were alive. Christianity is found in us through our belief and our ability to place our heart with God. So I challenge you to find and walk the path that God has made for you, just like your favorite person in the Bible did, because we have the same strength and faith to be just as strong and inspiring to future generations as the people in the Bible were to us. We just need to ask God to use us to fulfill His plan for us and have the courage to respond. If you would like to respond to God's plan tonight, please come forward as we stand and sing.